In eastern Syria, evacuees are streaming out of the last stronghold of Islamic State, Baghouz. Many of the thousands who have left in the last few weeks are families of IS fighters, as well as surrendered fighters themselves. Footage of the evacuations shows many women and children. And so-called jihadi brides are back in the headlines. The question of what happens next with these women is increasingly urgent. A group of female terrorism and insurgency experts are calling for the media and governments to go beyond clichés, which they say undermine women in IS and don't allow the West to grapple with why the women joined a violent group in the first place. Sarah Parkinson is the Aronson Assistant of Professor of Political Science and International Studies at Johns Hopkins University. I spoke with her a short time ago and asked her what is meant by jihadi brides.
There's this stereotype of this naive, ignorant woman who was either lured away to Islamic State by these sexy fighters or who was indoctrinated with promises of an Islamic utopia awaiting her in Iraq and Syria. So this is why we call it the jihadi bride trope, that this woman just took off to Iraq and Syria with no idea of what's going on to marry this man. So just to be clear, I'm talking about adults over the age of 18. It's really important to understand that girls under the age of 18 were in many cases carefully groomed by practiced recruiters and really had little idea of what they were doing.
And when we reduce them to jihadi brides or IS brides, what's the risk we run?
The problem here is that it overlooks the fact that many women joined Islamic State because they wanted to and because the group's message resonated with them. Now, two of the things that we need to be concerned with here is, A, why Islamic State's message resonated with so many people, and two, why specific individual women joined. Many women voluntarily join violent groups because they believe in the aims and they feel that they gain a political community, social support, personal recognition, and protection. And this is true even if the message of those groups seems patently anti-women, which the message of IS is patently anti-woman in many, many ways. It also implies that there's no way to demobilize and reintegrate them. They're not portrayed as people who process information, make choices, and potentially learn from mistakes, but as agents who have been completely brainwashed and only serve a larger cause.
Do you think it's likely that because of this jihadi bride idea we have in our head that we will let women off lightly? I mean, the high-profile case of Shamina Begum, for instance, suggests there's a lot of public anger towards her.
Shamima Begum is a particularly interesting case because she was 15 when she left the United Kingdom, and that's really, really important to emphasize. She was groomed. She traveled through Turkey into Syria and quote-unquote married a Dutch man who had joined Islamic State of his free will as an adult, right? And she was 15 when she married this man. This man is now speaking to the media, by the way, claiming that Begum chose to get married, which is not something, that's not terminology we would use in Australia or the United States. But she was a minor. Islamic State didn't allow women to live in its territory unmarried. Now he's using the media to demand that she be allowed to join him in the Netherlands. And the media's choice to air his demands is actually what we would call that in another circumstance, is giving this man an avenue to coerce someone who has already been coerced and manipulated.
Women who joined IS, as opposed to men who've joined IS, often when they say they want to return to the West, they come with the children. Should we consider their applications to return differently to those of the men if they are accompanied by children?
This is an extraordinarily difficult question. Human Rights Watch has just released a report on children who are suspected of being indoctrinated by Islamic State being tortured in prisons in Iraq. Many of the women who want to come back are saying, put me through a legal process, but allow my child to live with an aunt or grandparents or whomever. But I think that getting children into a supportive space is extraordinarily important. And if that means allowing women to return to their countries of origin and go through a legal process, that's essential.
Sarah Parkinson is the Aronson Assistant Professor of Political Science and International Studies at Johns Hopkins University, speaking there from Washington, D.C.